Hey, hello, hello, hello. Such a long time, bro.
Good morning to you.
Yeah, good afternoon, mister. If this is your morning, you're living a life.
I don't even know what time we're in with all these like terrible holidays. Like, is it we're
Yeah.
working, we're not working? It's terrible. It's terrible. And
Yeah, and the
all these people that don't have kids having fun is like the worst thing ever. It's like we don't want to hear about how much fun you're having with no kids.
Right.
We just don't want to hear about. Keep it to yourself. There are parents
Yes,
here.
save it. God damn you, millennials. No.
It's just terrible. Like my kid is just losing his mind with
Yeah.
like
My kid has been
preschool.
playing Mario Galaxy on the Nintendo Wii all day. All freaking day. And he keeps on, even when he's done playing, like, and we tell him to turn it off, it's not like 5, 10 minutes. It's like, can I play Mario Galaxy again? Yeah.
Dude, I'm waiting for that phase so bad right now. My kid just turned 3, and like it's still like at a phase where like he always wants our presence, you know. He always wants to play with us, blah blah blah. It's like
It doesn't
you
change.
can
My 4.5-year-old, he's not, he's probably gonna walk in the door right now. So just to set the scene to our listeners, yeah, I'm sitting at home, not in office anymore. I'm
sitting
sitting at home,
lying
lying
at
in
home.
bed, have the microphone on the side. So if the acoustics for this episode are kind of crappy, we apologize in advance. But yeah, my situation has changed. And I am unemployed now, as anyone that follows me on Twitter has probably seen. And it was kind of abruptly unemployed. It was a surprise. Yeah, so let me give the TLDR.
Tell us all about it.
Right, so I used to work for Fiverr, building a new product called Together. And when the market crashes hit, Fiverr came to my team, a team of about 9 people, and told us, listen, we love the product that you build. You've done a great job, but we can't keep this product going, this like company within a company. So we're gonna allow you to spin off, meaning we were supposed to take the product, create a new company, and keep on rolling and go like startup mode and get funding and all that. But somewhere along the road, somewhere between the bureaucracy, lawyers, contracts, and whatnot, it didn't work out. Now, I don't know exactly why, and I may not be legally allowed to say why not, but I don't even know. So I guess it doesn't matter. I'm not a Fiverr employee anymore. I'm not a Together employee. I am on my own at the moment. And this is all very fresh. We're recording this. What's the date today? It's the 11th. And since the 1st of October, I have been unemployed. So, yeah, that's like the
Crazy, eh?
gist of it. Yeah, crazy.
How's
Go ahead, ask, man.
unemployment life with a young child at home?
Well, it would have been better if it wasn't a holiday and he was sitting in the house all day. But yeah, I've been taking it easy, watching TV, taking meetings a little bit, trying to sniff around, understand what's going on, like what my next step is. I've gotten some advice to take it slow and maybe take a vacation. So we're gonna try and do that. We're trying to kind of catch a last minute flight somewhere, and it might be Sicily. So that could be cool. But yeah, but other than that, you know, trying to figure out my next move. So luckily enough, since like we last recorded, I've found something to do with my spare time, which is fiddle around with my site, which I kind of just published a month ago. And that gave me a chance to kind of write a little bit more and be able to kind of bash out some text if I want to. So yeah, that's something I got going.
Super, super cool. Build with Astro.
Right. So I built my site with Astro, and I've obviously used Tailwind, and I hosted it on Vercel, which was pretty easy to do. And it's funny because like I chose Astro because I kind of wanted this playground, right? To have the options to play with different kind of front-end frameworks. But what I ended up doing was basically I've written like everything in Astro components because it was so easy and kind of, and again, I don't mean it easy in terms of it's going to be easy to anyone, but it's kind of the old mental model of just, you know, old school web development. So HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. So you just write everything like in one file, which is pretty sweet. The only thing you have to kind of, if you want to use JavaScript and variables and whatnot and functions, you just have these three dashed lines at the top of your file. So actually six, because you have three in the top, three in the bottom, and between that like bracket of that's where you write your JavaScript, and then those get exposed as props to your component or page, depending. And then you just write HTML, and if you want styles, you put a style tag, and if you want JavaScript, you put a script tag, and that JavaScript gets inlined and can be executed. And you can also kind of, if you really want to go a step forward and kind of use a different framework to write your JavaScript project, then you have these really cool things called directives, which are a little bit similar but different than what you have in Angular. But those kind of client directives tell you when to load the JavaScript you want to use. So this is built on top of the island architecture, right? Which means you have these floating islands, but you decide when you want to hydrate them. So they can be hydrated, meaning the JavaScript will only run either when the component or page or whatever you decide is visible, or it could be just idle and you can just put nothing on it and then it just renders just HTML. So it's pretty sweet. You can kind of really tweak and control every little part. But yeah, it's messing around with stuff, yeah. So it's funny.
But eventually it's like it's like SSG, right? Like
not only
generates a bunch of HTML files.
Right, on one hand, but then again, Astro released V1 like about a few weeks or a week before I kind of built my site. And with V1, they actually added these adapters, right? So basically adapters for servers, which then you can actually make the whole application also server-side rendered. So you could potentially like take a request and response object and do with them whatever you want. So I've used the Vercel adapter, and right now I'm not doing anything with the server, but except for like redirect through Vercel at this point for one of my posts that I've kind of changed the route and the URL to, and then I had to redirect because I want to get that sweet, sweet link juice from Google. So right now, the app itself of my site is a server-side rendered app. It's mostly, most of it is static, but I wanted the option to have kind of a way to interact with a server.
Right. So, I mean, the most common criticism is with SSG is that like
you gotta build everything.
Yeah, you're not gonna build like a million pages or whatever. Obviously, for a developer blog, it's not really it's not really, you know,
issue
problematic. I mean, it could be like a half an hour build or something like that, but like that would be also probably one of the biggest criticisms is like, I think Kent called it on a podcast, spinner site generator.
Spinner site generator.
Yeah. Started to say that like anything that's really like, you know, bound to the user, that's like really dynamic, has to be fetched client side. And then eventually, like, because, you know, you want the experience to be very customized to the user, then eventually you find yourself just, you know, shipping like a like an empty shell and fetching everything on the client.
Well, that's,
I mean, I don't know, I've honestly never built like a site with like Gatsby or something. I never went the whole SSG route, so I can't speak to that, but you know, that's what I hear at least.
Yeah, but then again, you can do that, but for example, with what I'm doing on my site, again, everything is kind of static and there's right. No spinners. I get 100 out of 100 on all the performance, SEO and on whatnot scores on Lighthouse. But I do have some interactivity, right? So I got a little like a hamburger menu on mobile that does some animations. But not but much.
That's like all that. That's like CSS, right? Just like CSS.
And not only, I did like a little bit of JavaScript just to open and close like the thing, right? So
gotcha, yeah.
But I also have like some JavaScript that has to do with the light and dark theme, right? So toggling themes works with JavaScript and also saves stuff on like your local storage. So if you kind of change it from whatever your preferred theme is, it saves it in local storage, and that's done with JavaScript. Just a really like 3 lines of code.
Yeah,
that's pretty sweet.
That's cool, man.
Yeah,
seems really fitting for that type of site, you know?
Right. Yeah. So, but my kind of big plan with this, we're using Astro to build my blog, is having a playground. Like, I don't know.
Right.
I'm still kind of working it through, like a slash playground, and having all kinds of weird demos. I do maybe mixing like Solid with a view or something, or I know that there's now an adapter for Alpine and Lit and whatnot, so I can basically like installed all these npm packages to kind of get all the different frameworks working. But then again, I'm not using any of them yet, so they have no effect on my bundle size. They're just installed there and sit in my node modules on my local machine, and I guess on like for sales servers when I run it, but they're not doing anything at this point. Yeah, but I'm pretty happy with that.
Yeah, I really like the idea of, I mean, we don't have to get into it, but I really like the idea of having an app that's completely server driven, but is as performant as a completely like static HTML site using mm-hmm. like, you know, cache control headers and like a CDN and all that stuff. It's like, it feels like it's just like an interesting challenge, you know, from my mm-hmm. perspective too. So like, I can have like, if I can have all the power of a server when I need it, but and still get like the same performance, that's really cool.
Yeah,
I'm much more interested in trying to achieve something like that, you know.
Yeah, who did it? I think it was Theo, what's his name, Theo 3G, the guy behind the T3 ping. Yeah. So he had this stream that he did building the most performant site app that he could, and he did it using Astro, by the way, and heavily using cache headers and whatnot. It's pretty interesting to see. So You should check
That's
that out.
cool. That's
Oh,
cool.
yeah. Yeah, so back to kind of what I started with, the unemployment. So, yeah,
Yes.
interviewing is a bitch.
Yes, tell us some stories from the trenches.
Well, I haven't interviewed in many places, and I don't want to kind of disclose any kind of company I've been talking with, just for their sake, my sake, and I guess just some good measurements and all. But I've
Right.
been having lots of conversations, right? Trying to figure out what I want to do, right? And but it's funny, it's always kind of like the same questions you get asked. It's tell me about yourself. What are you doing? What are
Right.
you looking for in the next position?
What are you looking for? Have you like what have you come up with in these like 10 days?
Well, I can't exactly tell you. Well, because it's not all fully baked in my head, but I like want to do kind of the same thing that I've been doing, I guess, being a tech lead. But it's a very fluid kind of thing. I don't give a fuck about a title, right? I just like writing code. I like talking about it. I like kind of discussing it with other people. I like standardizing stuff. I like using making like the DX great. Okay. So anything around those sort of things. And also I love building products, right? I'm a product engineer. I've been building products for what, 7, 8 years now. And I've always been a product engineer and like shipping features to users, making getting stuff in people's hands. That excites me, right?
Do you feel that you care about like what type of product you work on?
So
Are
yeah.
there like any domains that you feel are more interesting
So yeah,
creating?
definitely. Like anything in developer tooling is very interesting and I'd like to explore it, right? But there are not a lot of really interesting developer tooling companies. Like maybe, well, I will kind of name drop companies that I'm interested in. Vercel is like one of those companies. Builder.io are doing amazing things. All these new kind of database stuff, these PlanetScale, and you got Neon, and you got Bit.dev, which I've followed closely for a while. So there's a lot of things that are kind of changing the way we build stuff. That's very interesting in my view. But on the other hand, I like products that are also delightful and just cool, right? So
Right.
Together was a great product to work on. It was interesting.
Right.
Lots of UI,
Right.
it was animations, it was trying to solve, kind of bring forward an industry to the future, right?
Right.
So those kind of things that do disruption are really interesting, right? Things that lots of customers or clients or users are using are interesting.
Right.
But
Do you care about like big company, small company, like early stage, growth stage, all that
well,
stuff?
yeah, it's hard to say because I really enjoy like early stage companies because I like to build from the ground up. I like kind of,
Who doesn't, right?
right, not only the fact of being greenfield, but kind of building the culture, right? Finding people that are not necessarily like-minded, but mesh together well as a team. That's interesting. Like finding the right way to get to product market fit. Thinking together as a team with the product and the designers and all that to making a great user experience. That's fun, right? And like scale-ups and bigger companies, you might not have that chance depending on what the structure
Right.
of the organization is.
Yeah. The pace is slower. You're kind of focused more on like micro optimizations.
It could be that, could be just pushing out features which are more in line with business needs and not necessarily like taking care of like proper engineering, right? That's all like in the end, in bigger companies, in bigger teams, you have to kind of sell your ideas, right? If you're trying to improve developer experience, like show me the fucking value to that. Show me the bottom line. Show me what it is you're trying to achieve. Let me see the dollar signs. Is this going to save me lots of developer hours, meaning reduce costs? Is this going to generate me some money because this feature is going to be something that a user loves using and they're going to just use it, or we can sell it or add it as another kind of a bucket of membership or whatnot. Yeah.
Right.
So.
I feel like in our industry, there's like, I mean, tell me if you feel the same way, but I feel like, with all that's like going on in like the tech market and like the stock market and everything, I think that sort of engine there's like a trend with engineers to like, I don't know if it's just engineers, but I feel like there's like a trend of like going more to like early stage companies because you sort of realize that after like the boom that we had with around COVID, you kind of feel like your only chance to really like make it big sort of is with like an early stage company, right? That you get like options and stuff that I think that
That
like
might
just like
materialize
people,
into like the big payday, the big.
yeah, because people are like I'm not trying to go to like whatever like a Microsoft and make like I don't know 3% a year,
Increase in salary.
on yeah no not on salary on like my stocks,
Right.
I'm not, because they like increase in value and like I don't know 3%, 7%, whatever. It's like not the way to get rich, right? But like if you go to like an early stage company and you get I don't know this much like options and then it goes public or it gets sold, then you make the big bucks.
Right, but on the other hand, the risk is very large, right?
Yeah, but
Even a
do
company, even
you
a startup within a public company, it went
Yes,
public, right?
absolutely. But do you also feel like that it's like it's somewhat of a trend in post-COVID days?
Well, I don't know. The thing is, because companies nowadays are less likely to succeed on one hand, and VC money is not flying around as it used to, and that companies that are getting built nowadays understand they need to show revenue faster, quicker than showing growth in numbers. So I think it's a different ball game. I don't know if I see it as now engineers moving on to working at more startups because they think the payday is bigger necessarily, but I do agree that it is probably has a higher chance of you making more money than if you go to kind of big tech fangs or whatnot.
Right.
Yeah, but then again, like if you go to work for Microsoft, like that stock is good, right? They're doing the right
Yes,
thing.
it's good, but you're not gonna get rich off it, right? It's
You're
be
not gonna
it'll
get rich
be
out of working, okay? You're gonna get
No,
rich only if you make your money work for you. And right.
but yeah, absolutely, but relatively, right? I'm not talking about We're not talking about rich. We're talking about like, having like enough capital to put a down payment on an apartment. That's what we're talking about here. It's
Right.
not like
Yeah.
we're talking about money that will make like a significant difference in, in your level of living. You're not gonna get that from whatever. Let's say you go to Microsoft, you get this much stock. And they're gonna increase in value, in a steady way for like I
Right.
don't know 3%, 5% each year. That's probably not the way to like, get I don't know like 800,000 shekels to make a down payment on an
Right.
apartment, right? The only way that you're gonna do that is, by you know, having like this big cash out,
right?
Payday. With like, yeah. I mean, it's obviously the chance of that happening is obviously lower, but that's probably the only way. Right? Yeah, it's like very, very low, but that's the only, that's probably the only thing that, you know, you can do. Because you're not going to get there. I mean, you can work, both of us, we can go, you know, work for like Microsoft for, I don't know, like, I'm just saying, right? I don't know, like salary, five, right? seven, eight, 10 years, and we're not going to, and we're not going to save up, you know, like 800,000 shekel, you know.
Not in our country, not in Israel, that's for sure. It's going to get worse and worse. But yeah, forget about that.
I mean, with Fiverr, there was like a moment where
people got rich.
You could, yeah. There was a moment you could, even, you know, for me, you could see it happening. You were like crunching the numbers, and you're just like, okay, dude, like if I sell all the stock, I mean, I can get like a nice chunk. But I think all of us got like, you know, disillusioned.
Yeah,
with
the stock price falling by 80%,
right?
When I first
you know interviewed with Fiverr, I think it was a time where that was like the hot thing, going to your Fivers, your Wixes, your Lemonades, because you were like seeing, okay, this stock is like just skyrocketing, and you know, people are checking the stock like every day. But then like it all, dude, the people that sold at like,
at the peak.
I don't know, like, yeah, at like, I don't know, like 300, and there were some people that's sold at like crazy, like, I don't know, like $250, $300. That's like crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. That's lots of moolah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I do think we'll have, I mean, I do think you, I don't think you can be in this industry, like as an engineer, with like different startups and stuff for like 30 years and not, you know,
make bucks,
not stumble upon, like, you know,
I've been an opportunity for a third of that almost, and I haven't like four companies, three startups, three or four, and no big payday, nothing. No kind of also any balance.
Me neither.
No,
but it,
security, yeah. Job security, dude.
Me neither, but it was close with Fiverr. I mean, maybe it was a unique situation that we're not going to see again, but it was close.
Right.
I mean, to making, you know, like cashing out in a big way. But I don't know. I do think it's a possibility.
I'm trying to
for us at least, you know.
Yeah, for a lot of people. So anyways, so I was saying interview sucks.
Yes.
And I think in general, and I was just part of this discussion on Twitter with what's his name? Dominic, the one of the maintainers from React Query, TK Dodo is his handle.
Yeah. And he's really nice.
Really nice dude. He chatted with them maybe once or in comments here and there. And he was asking like, what kind of do you think is the correct interview process? And I was thinking about this, and this is something I've been thinking about for a long time, because I've been being on the interviewer side of the desk, not the interviewee, which is the guy that gets interviewed. And no matter how much I kind of fine-tuned what I thought was a good interview process, I was never happy with it. And I'm never happy now when the tables are turned around, and it's been a while since I interviewed, like been on the other side. It's still shitty. Like even when they try it, it's like, putting people on the spot, code me this now. It just doesn't matter how much experience you have or how good you are. You might choke. I don't know. Either you might choke or you're not comfortable with the, like, the tooling you've been given.
Like, yeah, but today, I feel like
that was in an interview today, dude, and it was on Code Sandbox. And like the shit didn't work. It, like, after I wrote a few lines, did some React stuff, and then it started kind of getting laggy and it didn't work. True, I also put, like, introduced a bug into my code somewhere, but it was just dying. And I, like, also trying to use my shortcuts and whatnot, changing, doing search, I couldn't do it, like, because I was using someone else's computer. I'm like, why what is the benefit of this? And I think that you can know enough about a person professionally, if, and then again, this is all in terms of seniority and stuff, but someone that has enough of a track record, I think it's good enough to be able to sit down, have a conversation with them, talk tech, talk about, like, different experiences, about, like, different products he's built, code he's written, what he likes, what he doesn't, where does he see it, look at code together, talk about that. I think that's kind of enough also to kind of get a feel for the guy, if you like our girl, again, sorry, let's be inclusive, and get the kind of vibe that they have and understand if you want to work with this person, and is he smart enough or is he diligent enough to kind of learn and handle. And why not fire like hire fast, fire fast? That might be a better idea. I don't know, man.
I'm totally with you. I mean, I do like the coding exercise, because I feel like there's nothing like that can teach. I mean, I feel that the person's sensibilities are exposed via the code that he writes, more than anything that he would say. But for me, like, I don't care.
So you do want, like, a coding, write down code with me, or give me some sort of take-home task?
Yeah, I do. But I don't care about, like, you know, I don't care about if it's bug-free or, you know, like, whatever. If I'm, like, coding, if somebody, if we're coding together in, like, a code sandbox or something, and something breaks and I notice it, I'll say, hey, like, you're missing a thing, you know, there and there. It doesn't matter that it would be, like, you know, it doesn't matter if you miss whatever, like, a semicolon. It's not a semicolon, but it doesn't matter if you had a syntax error, because it's like a code sandbox or blah blah, blah, you messed something up. It's not the thing that matters, right? We mess that shit up every day.
Right.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. What I do care about is, you know, how you structure your code, how you think about a problem, what you care about, what you don't care about.
Yeah, but in a time frame.
But also, pressure, I'm not.
It doesn't you're not going to necessarily do those things because you're under.
I agree. That's why I always would prefer take home. And I would always suggest a take home. I mean, but I do realize, though, that some people don't like that, because they're like, I don't want to do it on my own time or whatever. But I do think that, like, a take home exercise is better. I even prefer that over, you know, I think the worst thing is that some companies are like, come over here for like half a day. We'll like give you like a room somewhere and you just be here for like a half a day. It's like, you feel so
for me, like, it was kind of weird. So think about this. I sat down with two people, right? They interviewed me, asked me lots of questions to start with. They're like, okay, now it's time to do the coding challenge. And he sat me in front of a computer which was also kind of buggy, and the screen didn't work and whatnot. And then they sat with me and said, okay, let's start it off with this. And they watched both of them looking at me code, right? And then, okay, finish that part up. I finished that part up. And then they're like, okay, we're going to take 10 minutes and go out. You keep on working and we'll come back. Dude, that was so weird, right? And even if you gave me that time alone, that didn't really help. You already put me in a weird position.
That's right. What I'm saying. Like, even like being alone and not in your in the comfort of your own home or whatever is like, even if I'm alone, I'm in like in some office, I feel awkward. I'm like coding on my laptop instead of like, you know, being in like my comfortable workstation or whatever. It's like it's just not a good, you're not going to see the person. Right. You know, performing his best.
Cut you off for a second, right? Because we gotta kind of break this off to another piece of a recording. So you were saying, Roman, before I cut you off.
Yes, I was just saying that you're not gonna get like the person at their best, even that in that scenario, right?
Right. And it sucks. Why is this so broken? Why has the industry has been, you know, evolving a lot? And this is still one of the most like sought after talents or engineers, right? And it's one of the most important things to kind of be able to onboard people and hire when you need to. And it's still so broken. It's hard for candidates, it's hard for the interviewers, it's hard to understand what you are expected to do. How do you actually kind of find the right candidate, find the right process? It's right. A solved problem in our industry,
indeed. Right? And then after all that time, you bring something on, you bring someone on, and after 6 months, you realize it's not going anywhere, you know. So yeah, I agree with you completely. Like, we need to chill on, I mean, first of all, I think that we need to learn how to work with people that are less experienced and realize that, like,
no doubt,
that's not the thing that matters. I mean, if you have like good culture and like good practices and good tools, you can, I mean, a person will learn, you know. Yeah, a person would adapt. It's just, you know, if you have like enough of like experienced people on your, I mean, other experienced people on your team, it'll be okay. And the thing that matters is, you know, from my perspective at least, is like personality. Is that person, is he gonna be like, you know, how is he gonna react to criticism? How is he gonna communicate with his team members? How is he gonna, you know, align with like the company culture and environment? Those are the things that matter, you know. Right. That will make or break. That's, you know, that will decide if a person is gonna stick around after 6 months or no. Mm-hmm. You know. There's this video on like TikTok and stuff. I don't remember, the guy is like, I don't know, like a known figure, and he talks about like he talks about how he went to talk with the SEALs, like SEAL team 6 or something like that. Okay. Like how you like evaluate candidates or something like that. And they sort of told him about like this graph of like one axis, like the y axis is like performance and the x axis is trust. And okay. they said that they would much prefer a low performance, high trust candidate than a high performance, low trust candidate. And this is like talking about like a very like you know, obviously a performance oriented
yeah.
organization, obviously, right? It's like, it's literally like your life depends on it, right?
I see the logic in it, right? Your life depends on it. You'd rather have someone you trust rather than someone you don't trust, but is much more, I don't know, better at shooting. Because maybe he's going to be so enthralled with shooting something or covering his ass than like having your back, right? Yeah, I definitely go with that kind of methodology for hiring as well. Rather have someone I trust and that can learn rather than someone that's a really, really good technically, but is a douchebag, right?
Right. Absolutely. Also, yeah, I mean, I feel like, I don't know, like in my experience, it's like, you know, it boils down to like, you know, when you have a deadline and it's not comfortable and you have to make a bunch of compromises, it's like, who's going to whine about it? Right. And who's just going to get it done, you know?
But, you know, some are going to whine and get it done. Present company.
Right.
Hey, yeah. You know, I know. I'm aware of my flaws, right?
No, I might whine also if it's
you're
like
a whiner. I work with you, man.
Yeah. If it's like a company thing, it's like a corporate thing where like get some instructions from, you know, the board, then you have to do something a certain way or blah blah blah, and you kind of feel like it's, you don't have any power over it, I might complain about that.
Yeah, well, but that's the way for improvement. Also, complaining and hashing things out is a way to kind of surface things and from the bottom and bring them up to the top so you can improve on them. So
right.
Trade-offs, like anything, double-edged sword on one hand. You have to be like, complain nicely.
Right.
Or sarcastically, right. With a good kind of humorous vibe to it. Then it's
right.
Might be passed on better. So, yeah. Go ahead, man.
We just shipped a remix app to production. Nice. Recently. Yeah, and changing gears a little bit. It just came to my head, and the bull just went out.
Right, I was just about to ask, like, what's going on with you, man? I've been telling all.
Yeah,
my,
yeah, yeah. So
what are you doing?
So yeah, so we shipped this new product, and I just gotta tell you, it's still kind of surprising to me, like how good, you know, these tools have become. I mean, Tailwind, Radix,
yeah,
Remix, mm-hmm. We're also using GraphQL CodeGen.
Okay.
I mean, I don't like GraphQL, but like our backend is in GraphQL, so you know, having this like code generator is like super useful if you have to do that. I mean, I would much prefer obviously to have like a Prisma or something and just go directly to the DB, but if you have to go through that layer of indirection, I mean, CodeGen makes it so nice. And it's just, dude, like the productivity is like crazy. I mean, Radix is such a good product.
Of like app size and how many screens and whatnot. I'm just curious.
It's at this point, it's like really small. It's probably like 8 or 10 screens, something like that. It's sort of like a cruddy app. It's like an admin panel type of app. But I just feel like that, like, it's so easy to get stuff done, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, especially for me, I because I came from like this MVC sort of background, so working in this type of environment is like really natural to me. Mm-hmm. And I have all the conventions, you know, baked to my brain of like how to set up your route, you know, your like URL structure and like how to map routes to it. And, you know, sort of how to communicate server to client is like very, you know, it's like very vivid in my brain. Which is not necessarily the case for some, you know, for some of my teammates that are like more, you know, front end oriented. But for me, it's like working in this environment is just so productive.
Well, it's for you, but I am interested actually in your teammates that maybe don't come with a background in MVC and are much more front end oriented. How was that experience for them? Like suddenly writing loader functions in Remix and accessing like all the backend stuff. Was it productive for them? Were there certain people that didn't know Tailwind and did it help them? Were they productive after an X amount of time? That those are things that are interesting.
So honestly, that's like a whole conversation on its own. We started out with styled components.
Mm-hmm.
The idea initially was, I mean, the company is like very, like people here are like very invested in CSS and JS and they really like it. So mm-hmm. the idea was to go initially with Radix and Stitches.
Yeah,
that was the idea initially, just because like just because it was like, okay, like we're gonna use Radix and Stitches, and Radix obviously work really well together, so we might as well do that. And it was already decided, and then the whole Work OS thing happened.
Yeah,
and I think like as a side effect, it not only that, also like the React 18 streaming happened, and they published, I don't even know when, but they sort of surfaced.
Just remind me, what is exactly the Work OS thing?
Oh, so Work OS acquired, so Radix and Stitches were developed by this company called Modules.
Right.
Which eventually did not find a product market fit. It was supposed to be like this visual like Figma type editor, and they didn't find they didn't find their thing. And then they got acquired by another company called Work OS. And then Work OS was like, okay, let's see like what we keep and what we don't, and what we want to invest our time in. And I think, and then it sort of surfaced around Stitches, the fact that, you know, at this point with React 18, any CSS and JS solution that has runtime is problematic. Yeah. It's problematic with hydration and streaming, blah, blah, blah. It's like, it's not the direction that the React team is going to, dude, you know, and the
React team has no fucking idea where they're going to. I'm really kind of, almost going on like the ship that's going off of React. So we'll get back to that. We'll circle back to that.
All right. Let's put all a pin in that one.
Yeah.
So I, you know, at least publicly, like the React team has, you know, publicly stated that like they
don't just like this event. You see that?
I did. Mm-hmm. But essentially, they said they don't like the approach of like runtime and injecting styles into your head. They want to have like a link tag that, you know, goes to a static CSS file that's cacheable, blah, blah, blah. So we didn't know what to do. And I obviously suggested Tailwind, and everybody else on the team was like,
no,
over my dead body. It was like everybody else.
You love the controversy. Like, just because it was controversial in your team, you decided to push it forward.
No, that's not true. No, I was definitely tempted, but it was so, everybody else was so against it. But to be honest, initially I knew that it's going to be like an uphill battle and like people are like really against it. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna, you know, I'm gonna let it go. Let's hear, you know, other ideas.
Yeah.
So one idea was Linaria.
Mm-hmm.
You heard about that one?
Yeah.
So it's like a CS, it's like a fully like built time CSS and JS solution like Vanilla Extract, but the syntax is really similar to Style Components, and we already have Style Components a lot in the company, so like people were for that. So I tried to integrate it with Remix for like a good 2-3 days, and I just couldn't hack it, you know, with like, because we have like a monorepo that has like the Remix app and like a library for the design system, and they need to like play nice together, and I just couldn't like make it work. Yeah. So I spent, you know, a certain amount of time. So then we decided, okay, let's just go with Style Components for now. And because we had, you know, like a deadline to get this product, you know, off the ground.
Yeah.
So like, okay, let's go with Style Components till the deadline and see, and then like see what happens. People were sure that, you know, in those like whatever a month or like 2 months, people were sure that either Style Components are going to come up with a solution to be like fully build time, which is never going to happen in my opinion. Either Facebook releases their StyleX thing that they teased at like 2021,
mm-hmm.
or like I don't know, some other solution is going to come up. Nothing changed, right? So we went ahead with like Style Components, did that, you know, made the deadline, and then we sort of, you know, so we sort of re-examined the situation, and literally nothing changed. You know, it's like not even the Style Components team didn't even address it formally.
Mm-hmm.
They like said nothing. They're like open issues. They didn't say anything. Nothing changed with Stitches. Still the exact same situation. Nothing changed with Linaria. Just the exact same situation. Nothing changed in the Remix side of like opening up the compiler. Although at this point they are working on it, and they have announced formally that they are working on it, but it didn't happen. Facebook didn't ship anything. Nothing changed.
Right.
So we were like, okay, we need to make a decision. It can't be like a temporary decision anymore. And I was like, okay, how about Tailwind now? Mm-hmm. You know? And throughout
it generates CSS in the end. It doesn't need.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't build
and time. throughout that time that we were working with Style Components, I made sure to like slowly drip, you know, like, hey, check out this, you know, article about Tailwind. Hey, check out this thing that's like problematic with CSS and JS. It's like dripping, dripping, dripping. And I gave a demo about like working with Remix and with like SSR streaming.
Mm-hmm.
And how like powerful it is and what we're missing with working in like Style Components. And then eventually the team, you know, got on board, you know.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So now
are they gonna hear this podcast episode and then say, oh, that Roman, now I know why he shared all those articles.
Yeah. Dude, it was so obvious. Like nobody was like, you know, thinking it was naive.
No, come on. It's sitting on the tip of my tongue. That movie with Leonardo DiCaprio. Come on.
Which one?
Inception? Inception. You incepted them.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think eventually, you know, it's even written on, I mean, Adam wrote it like on the homepage of Tailwind. It's like the first, like the initial reaction of anybody looking at Tailwind is like they want to throw up in their mouth, and you just need to, you know, hold that reaction in for long enough to try it, and right. then you'll be converted. But I am really excited to see my teammates dive, you know, use it more and mm-hmm. see how they like it, like hardcore, like CSS and JS fans, see how they like it, you know.
But how is the like initial velocity with that for your fellow teammates?
So we haven't really dived into it. It's just at this point, it's just like I'm the only one working.
All the tooling. Around?
Yeah, I set up all the tooling, and I'm like mostly working on the design system and doing it with Tailwind, and I'm now working on sort of migrating the layout. Mm-hmm. to Tailwind, and it's so nice. It's like so it's so good. Yeah. And you know, the
Fiverr, just before this whole shindig happened, decided not to go with Tailwind and decided to go with Extract.
Obviously
they went
I know
Extract. Yeah,
you know what the only problem is with a vanilla Extract, the idea is I tried it out, the idea is you're supposed to build like your own sort of Tailwind.
Yeah,
that's the idea, like have like a box component, a text component, something like styled system. And right. the only problem with that, I prefer a box component, you know, that has props like justify content, and then, you know, or like whatever, like a color, like a background color. I prefer that over the class names.
Yeah.
The only problem with that currently is that there is no way to purge the CSS.
I had a discussion with Michael, if you remember Michael, about
if this. I remember,
if you remember. Right.
Yeah.
And he was exactly like that. Like, as soon as you have lots of variations and permutations, like, you're going to ship a lot more CSS when you're using Tailwind.
When you're using Tailwind? No.
Using he said that with the design system, at least at Fiverr, and the way that they had so many permutations and variations, even if you use Tailwind, it wouldn't get purged well enough. Because it'll have to have, like, if you have a button with four variations, it's going to have all that CSS for that four variation. And if you remember what happens in Fiverr is that styles can be loaded twice, right? Or three times, or there's all that mess with the like, whatever is building, like, we're not going to get into details, whatever builds, like, the micro front-end pages, server-side renders, React, and all that. It could be like two different apps, and if you move forward, you're going to load CSS again, right? And this is just from conversations I had. I haven't used it. So just because of that fact, it wouldn't be good, because it would still bloat up the bundle too much. But again, that kind of,
I mean,
weird to me. But I understand.
Yeah, I don't,
it could be
all you need.
Yeah.
All you need is really like a way to. It is complicated in such a distributed system, but all you need is a way to sort of parse all the markup, and you know, but like, yeah, I can get how, you know, in a situation like Fiverr's, it's problematic to use Tailwind, and maybe it's better to use something that like you just ship the CSS that you have, you know, that you have for each, you know, page or whatever. Mm-hmm. In that case, but you know,
I don't know. But again, I think it's like, also it depends on the scale, and a company that has scale like Fiverr does need to put an emphasis on certain things, and they have constraints to how the architecture is, and
right. Not. But again, like, vanilla Extract is still not a good solution for that, because what are you gonna do? Like, it's not it's not really built for like ad hoc styles. It's built so that you can build with it a box component or a text component, you know? So it's still not a good solution for that use case. Like style components would probably be a better use case, you know, or something like style components would be, you know, better where you just write, where you just couple like the CSS with like your, you know,
your wrapper
page or yeah, or whatever, would probably be more fitting for something like that, you know?
Right. That's what I really enjoyed about Astro. I wanted a style and a specific page or specific components, just drop a style tag, write the CSS, boom, you're done.
Dude, I worked with Vue like that, mm-hmm. probably like a good 6 years ago, you know, when Vue just came out. It's just like so obvious that you have your markup here and your style here. You know, right. it was
and it's scoped also in Vue, right?
Yeah, it's scoped. So it's much, much less painful than like even, you know, doing something like styled, like whatever, CSS modules.
Yeah.
Or something like that. So anywho, we're going with Tailwind now. It's a delight. And hopefully, and it will be very interesting to see how my teammates adapt. Also, Radix is so good for design systems. The API design is just really, really good. It's yeah, absolutely. They just really give you all the power. If you just embrace, like it's like with Tailwind, if you just embrace the low level nature of the components and you just give it a thin wrapper with you know some things that you really don't want to have you know duplicated,
mm-hmm.
and you do the composition in at the app layer, you know, mm-hmm. I'll give you like an example. One of the most like difficult components, you know, like a select or a combo box,
right?
Your initial inclination is just to bake everything in, but then you realize that those types of components, it's just about the behavior. The look and feel needs to be specific to the content. If you make a combo box of like users, it needs to look differently than a combo box of I don't know, like like user roles, for example, right? It needs to look different. It needs to have like different characteristics. And if you try and sort of bake everything in with like these like high level variants or whatever, you're going to have a terrible time, you know, both maintaining it from the design system side and, you know, using it at the application level. So I'm really trying to keep it like very, very low level, trying to really abstract the most minimum amount of like components from Radix, mm-hmm. you know, and trying to basically keep it in the same like structure that they do.
Right, but just a wrapper component under your name, kind of same to what
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And I use Tailwind Merge, mm-hmm. which is, you heard about that one?
I think I've used it too, I think.
It's one of the biggest pain points it used to be one of the biggest pain points with Tailwind and these with like design system components, where you really had to, if you wanted the ability to like customize something, right, you really had to like create an API for it and say like, you know, I don't know, you need to like accept like a background prop and you need to specify like all the classes that you accept,
mm-hmm.
you know, blah, blah, blah. It was just a pain. And with Tailwind Merge, it's like, it's so nice that you can just, at the application side, you can just say, you know, in this specific use case, I want to have like BG Green 500 and not like BG Orange 500. And it just works, right? So I've really been enjoying it. It's such a nice developer experience. And it's like I cranked out like 10 or like 12 of these like design system components in like no time at all. Tailwind and Radix together in like a monorepo architecture is like, dude,
bang bang,
so
yeah.
quick, so quick. It's
speaking about quick.
Oh no! Oh, we're not going down that rabbit hole.
That rabbit hole. Fuck React, man. Quick as the future. Seriously. It makes so much sense, man. Like all this kind of trying to. Okay, I'll give you an example of why this whole thing is broken. So, like we said, use event, which was the way of the React team to kind of fix all the way that synthetic events use and all these stupid ways of memoizing stuff and callbacks, use memo, react.memo, and all that fun stuff. So I'm not sure if the last one is completely correct, but whatever. You understand what I'm saying. There's so many ways you can shoot yourself in the foot with React. And the event was supposed to be a way kind of forward to make you not think about too much of those things. And circling back to kind of my interview today and something that I was asked, that it was something to do with a form that I did. And then it was like, oh, you used a set state and you didn't use the updater function. You know what happens if you don't understand use it. I'm like, yeah, but what the fuck? Like, you know, yeah, is React synchronous or asynchronous? Why do I need to kind of remember that and know that? And why should it be a question in an interview?
It definitely shouldn't. The use case for that at this point is like so little.
Exactly.
It's so small.
So I've been digging into Quick and trying it out, and I wrote a post about it on my site, and you're welcome to check it out, and you haven't told me what you think about it. But anyways, I think like I don't know if it's necessarily gonna be the next thing, but the thing that it brings is a paradigm shift in how we build JavaScript applications, right? So the beauty of it is it also is resumable, which is one of the key for you, right? But everything is lazy loaded, so it splits everything into chunks for you automatically and only loads the chunks you need when you need them. And it does this really smartly, so it can be like an app that is broken down to 1,000 little pieces. But unlike doing lazy loading in React or something like that, which every little piece you'd have to kind of wait for the whole application to get that piece and hydrate, with Quick it's not an issue, right? It doesn't need to be. It just works, and it's really easy. And the API, and you write JS6, and the API is pretty simple. You just add like a dollar behind on Quick and add a dollar here, and it's
I have no loyalty to React whatsoever. If I get a sense that the tides are shifting, dude, I'm jumping this ship so fast. Right. I mean,
I'm sick of it, dude.
I don't feel like I'm sick of it. All I care about is like, you know, all I care about at this point is like having something that I know is like battle tested. I know that has a community, has enthusiasm around it, has, you know, an ecosystem.
I know.
I mean, Cypress is a great example. I've worked with Cypress for years. I mean, I've given like talks about it, and
now Playwright has pulled.
Yeah, and now exactly, and Playwright has now come in the scene, and the tides are shifting. You know, tides are shifting, and people are sick of some features of Cypress. Mm-hmm. And I still think that Cypress has a better, you know, DX than Playwright at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the issue.
By Microsoft, okay, right?
Yeah. It's not the issue. The only issue is like, which way is the wind blowing? And currently, the wind is, as I see it, at least, the wind is blowing towards Playwright and against. I mean, it's still very, very popular. It's going to continue to be popular, right? But if you're asking what's the what's the direction? In my mind, in my perspective, it's Playwright. So now choosing an end-to-end testing framework, initially I was suggesting Cypress, and one of the developers was like suggesting Playwright. You know, for me, like at this point, like if I have to pick like a new framework, at this point it's probably going to be Playwright. And not because I like it more. I like Cypress very much. I'm much more familiar with it. I mean, I'm going to have to learn how to work with Playwright, but I know that, you know, that it's gaining traction. It's important. In my mind, it's important when you're choosing a technology not to only look about like how popular it is right now, mm-hmm. but also like where's it going, you know?
Right. I'll just say this. I use Playwright to kind of just print out a PDF file. It was like 6 or 7 lines of code. Done. It was mm-hmm. amazing. It was really easy to understand. Yeah.
I also use it on a website to like scrape another website, and it's it's nice. It is nice. They just got some selectors that are testing library, which is really, really, really a big sell for me. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I'm just saying it's very important to you know keep your ear to the ground. And And Twitter, a lot of times people complain about Twitter being like, you know, detached mm-hmm. or whatever. And I'm like, that's like the best thing about it. It's telling you where it's going, not where it's at. Don't expect, nobody's going to talk about fucking Redux on Twitter. Although it's still growing and it's still one of the most popular, you know, tools in the industry, but it's done.
Friends, it's done. Friends use Redux.
Right. It's done at this point. You know, even if it's so popular, like it's not going anywhere. Yeah. And in my mind, style components.
In so many queues.
It's the same way. Style components is like probably one of the most popular tool, but it's dead. It's not going anywhere, you know? So I think it's a good place to wrap up, buddy.
Right. But there was one thing we wanted to talk about. We're going to have to save it for next time, I guess. But I'm glad we did this. It's been a while, man. Good to see you. And
absolutely.
Right. And we'll keep doing this. Let's hope that like the tides are going to turn on like my situation.
Employment situation.
Employment situation. But yeah, I'm open to DMs, and I've gotten some, and thank you lots of people that have been like helping out. It's been really cool of you, and hopefully I'll find myself and my feet and I'll go abroad, and hopefully, yeah, we'll get to see each other, Roman, in person, because we haven't done that in a while.
Yes.
And I also celebrated my 40th and you didn't come because you were stuck at home. With your kids.
Congratulations, buddy. Yes.
Thank you. And I jumped out of an airplane, by the way.
Yes, I know that. That is very cool.
Yeah, it was fun. So on that note, we're going to just sign off now. Peace.
All right, buddy. Cheers. Bye.